Good morning, Gaming Elite. This is Tekken Warning for August 20, 2026. Today, we witness a seismic shift in PlayStation's strategy. Guerrilla Games' upcoming Horizon multiplayer project, Hunter's Gathering, is stripping out all live service systems, abandoning microtransactions and battle passes after severe internal playtest pushback. It's pivoting into a premium narrative co-op RPG. Meanwhile, a major supply chain cyberattack at CEVIA Logistics has exposed the physical order data of European Pokemon Center and Steam hardware buyers. If you ordered a Steam Deck or anniversary card sets in the UK or Germany, watch out for fake customs phishes. Stay ahead of the curve. Join us for the complete investigative breakdown at tekkengame.com.
Man, you hear a briefing like that, and it paints an incredibly chaotic picture of the industry right now. I mean, we're looking at massive studio course corrections right alongside these critical infrastructure meltdowns.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to today's deep dive, everyone. We are unpacking that massive August 20, 2026 Tekken Game briefing. And honestly, underneath all of this, there is just one single terrifying threat.
Oh, absolutely. It's the battle for control.
Right. It's this absolute loss of control and the desperate clawing back of it. Like, players are finally demanding control back from these predatory game designs. But at the same time, we are completely losing control of our personal data out there in the physical supply chain.
Yeah. And in our enterprise networks, too. It's wild.
So let's start with the pushback on the gaming front, because this is huge. The internal shakeup at Sony and Guerrilla Games with Horizon Hunter's Gathering. I mean, amid development, 180-degree pivot away from a live service model.
It's practically unheard of at this scale.
Right. They're gutting the battle passes, just stripping out all the seasonal microtransactions and converting the whole thing into a premium narrative co-op RPG.
The structural realities of a pivot like that just, they really cannot be overstated. When a studio builds a live service title, the entire underlying architecture, like the progression loops, the server-side authentication, you know, even the way loot drops are calculated, it's all built around maximizing engagement metrics.
Yeah, keeping you on that treadmill.
Exactly. Maximize recurring spending. So tearing that out isn't just flipping a switch in the code. It means ripping out the very foundation of the game and retrofitting, like an authored, definitive beginning, middle, and end onto mechanics that were originally designed to literally run forever.
I look at the timeline here, and honestly, I just see panic. The briefing states that PlayStation Management has put the core team on the clock. They have a December 2026 milestone deadline to prove this new premium narrative loop actually works.
Yeah, or the project gets the axe.
Exactly. And a huge chunk of the staff has already been reassigned back to the mainline single-player Horizon game. So I have to ask, is this genuine creative realignment, or is PlayStation just cutting their losses because, you know, the market for live service is just completely saturated?
Well, it is a bit of both, I'd say, but heavily weighted toward market exhaustion. I mean, summer 2026 has been an absolute bloodbath for speculative live service games.
Oh, totally.
And the data from those internal private playtests for Horizon clearly showed severe player rejection. The modern player base is just tapped out. They don't want a second job.
Right. Okay, let's unpack this for a second. This whole games as a service pivot, it's like realizing you're exhausted by this chaotic, endless, all-you-can-eat buffet where you have to, like, pay for the plates.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
And you just want to go back to a really well-crafted, sit-down dinner with a beginning, middle, and end.
That is exactly it. And the financial risk of launching a live service game that fails to capture, you know, a massive daily active user base, that risk is now far greater than the cost of pivoting to a traditional boxed co-op RPG. At least with the RPG, you guarantee a baseline of premium sales.
And that hunger for authored finite experiences is really dominating the release slate right now. Just look at the horror drop confirmed today. Saber Interactive and Boss Team Games are launching Clive Barker's Hellraiser Revival on October 8, 2026.
Oh, yeah, this is a big one.
First-person survival horror. It's hitting the PS5, Xbox, PC, and notably, the Nintendo Switch 2. And they actually got Doug Bradley back to voice Pinhead, which is just incredible.
It really is. And the inclusion of Clive Barker directly in the development process, along with Bradley's return, it signals a very specific design philosophy here.
How so?
Well, survival horror, as a genre, it only functions when the developer exercises absolute control over the player's resources and pacing. It's the complete antithesis of that play forever, do anything live service model we were just talking about.
Right, right. And the mechanics they're highlighting in the briefing really prove that point. You play as a character named Aiden, searching for his partner in the labyrinth, And the core gameplay revolves around the Genesis configuration puzzle box.
Yeah, the iconic puzzle box.
But you don't just solve it to open doors. It acts as this conduit for supernatural abilities, like telekinesis, pyrokinesis, summoning chains. So it sounds like they're heavily gating your power progression based on very specific narrative beats.
Which is exactly what the audience is craving right now. You are given highly specific, authored tools to solve meticulously designed encounters. Even the $49.99 Deluxe Edition leans into this highly curated aesthetic.
Oh, with the retro filter.
Yeah. It offers this authentic 1980s retro horror visual filter. The studio is selling a highly controlled atmospheric mood rather than an endless treadmill of just, you know, generic content.
So on one hand, it is incredibly empowering to see the gaming community successfully force developers to respect their time and deliver real quality over endless monetization.
Truly a win for the players.
But, and this is a huge but, that feeling of taking back control completely evaporates the second we step out of the digital game world and look at how our physical purchases are handled.
Oh man, the supply chain issue, yeah.
The CEV logistics cyber attack is the perfect example of where consumer control is just entirely an illusion.
Yeah.
So between July 29 and August 1st, attackers breached CEA systems, exposing European customers, specifically in the UK and Germany.
It's been a massive exposure.
But wait, hold on. Let me push back on this for the listener. If CEVA is just the logistics company, you know, moving the boxes, why do they have my full name, my email, my phone number, and a detailed itemized list of what I bought?
Because the shipping industry is a mess of legacy systems.
But shouldn't Valve and the Pokemon Center be masking or hashing that data before they hand it off to a courier? Like, I just bought a Steam Deck. I didn't consent to giving a cargo company a full dossier on my hardware setup.
Yeah.
How do you even protect yourself if the leak comes from a logistics partner you didn't even choose?
You've highlighted the foundational flaw in modern global shipping right there. In theory, data masking sounds perfect, right? But in practice, legacy APIs that connect these retail storefronts to third-party logistics providers, they require massive amounts of clear text data.
Really? Just out in the open?
Yeah, because customs manifests require exact itemized descriptions of the merchandise to calculate duties. And then last-mile couriers, they demand direct phone numbers and emails to handle delivery exceptions or, like, gate codes.
Wow.
So the retailer's secure network might be an absolute fortress, totally bulletproof, but the moment they dispatch that physical package, they are forced to export your sensitive data to vendors operating with significantly weaker security postures. Your data is only as secure as your weakest third-party vendor.
That exposure is devastating, especially for high-value items. The briefing mentions the Pokemon Center had to proactively cancel the shipments for the exclusive TCG 30th Anniversary Collector sets.
Yeah, a proactive cancellation is a big deal.
They had to, because they knew bad actors had the tracking info and the physical addresses, and they were anticipating this massive wave of fraudulent delivery redirections, and Valve confirmed their European Steam Deck shipping addresses were exposed too.
It's a logistical nightmare.
And the briefing really emphasizes that no financial data or internal network credentials for Steam or Pokemon were breached. But honestly, knowing these hackers have my physical address and my phone number,
yeah,
that feels infinitely more invasive.
Right, because the immediate threat profile here isn't a stolen credit card. It's the weaponization of context.
Explain that.
Well, these attackers now have highly granular data. They know your full name, they know you live in Berlin, and they know you are actively waiting on a Steam Deck.
Oh, so the play here is hyper-targeted phishing.
Unquestionably. You will receive an SMS message that perfectly mimics a regional customs authority or your local courier, and it will state that your specific order naming, the Steam Deck, is held up pending, like, a minor clearance fee.
And because the context aligns perfectly with reality, people will just click it.
Exactly. The psychological friction that usually stops someone from clicking a suspicious link is completely bypassed. This demands hypervigilance from the listener. If you ordered these things, you must bypass any links sent via text or email and manually verify your shipping statuses directly on the official storefronts.
Just absolutely terrifying that our personal security is entirely at the mercy of a third-party delivery company's IT hygiene.
Mm.
But, you know, that's just a single vendor. What happens when the vulnerability is baked into the operating system that literally every one of those vendors is running?
Then the damage scales exponentially. And sadly, That is exactly the scenario playing out with the emergency red alert issued by CISA.
The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency.
Right.
They issued Binding Operational Directive 2604 regarding a critical flaw in Windows, specifically the Internet Key Exchange, or IKE, service module.
Yeah, CVE-2026-33-824.
Right, and it carries a severity score of 9.8 out of 10. The briefing calls it a pre-auth RCE, a pre-authentication remote code execution vulnerability based on a double free memory corruption. Break down the mechanics of that memory corruption for me, because a 9.8 implies a catastrophic system failure.
It really is. Okay, so a double free memory corruption is like telling a hotel's computer system to check a guest out of room 101, and then a microsecond later telling it to check them out again.
Okay.
The system gets incredibly confused by that impossible second request. So it marks the room as vacant and available for new guests, but it fails to actually clear the previous guest's belongings out of the room.
Oh, I see.
In computing terms, the memory space is marked free for new data, but the attacker's malicious instructions are still sitting there. When the operating system goes to use that memory space again, it accidentally executes the attacker's payload.
Wow. And the pre-auth part of this RCE makes it even worse. A pre-auth RCE flaw.
Yeah.
It's basically like a burglar who doesn't even need to steal your keys or pick your lock. They just wave a magic wand from the street and your front door vanishes entirely.
That is exactly how it functions. You don't need a stolen password. You don't need a phishing campaign. You break the system before it even gets the chance to ask you for your credentials.
That's insane.
The attacker just sends a maliciously crafted packet to the network edge. Before the Windows server can even ask the sender to authenticate themselves, the packet triggers the memory corruption and grants the attacker remote control.
Which is why CESA mandated that all federal civilian agencies catch this by August 21. They are also demanding network administrators filter UDP ports 500 and 4500 immediately.
Yes, because UDP 500 and 4500 are the specific communication channels the IKE service uses to establish VPN connections. If you don't filter those ports, your front door is wide open to the public internet.
And the attackers aren't manually typing these exploits out on a keyboard, right? They have automated scanning tools actively prowling the web, looking for any unpatched endpoint they can compromise.
Exactly. The velocity of the threat landscape has completely shifted from manual intrusion to industrialized automated cybercrime.
Which brings us to the joint advisory from the FBI and CISA about the Medusa ransomware syndicate. The brief states they have breached over 500 critical infrastructure entities, healthcare, defense, manufacturing, and they operate on a ransomware as a service model, or RAS.
A huge problem right now.
So just to be clear, the people who code this incredibly sophisticated malware aren't even the ones doing the hacking.
That is the genius and, well, the horror of the RAS economy. It functions exactly like a legitimate software as a service business. The core developers of Medusa focus entirely on writing devastating encryption algorithms and maintaining the back-end payment infrastructure.
Like a normal debt company.
Basically, yeah. They then lease the software out to affiliates. These affiliates are the actual hackers breaking into the networks. When a ransom is paid, the core developers take a percentage cut, and the affiliate keeps the rest. This lowers the barrier to entry so drastically that anyone with basic intrusion skills can deploy military-grade ransomware.
The briefing emphasizes that Medusa's affiliates weaponize newly published vulnerabilities, like that Windows IKE flaw we just discussed, within 24 hours of public disclosure.
You have less than a day to patch before they are inside your walls.
And once they breach the perimeter, they don't deploy the Medusa payload right away. They use a tactic called living off the land.
Yes, which fundamentally breaks traditional antivirus defenses. Instead of bringing in noisy, recognizable malware files that a security system would instantly quarantine, the attackers use the operating system's native administrative tools against it.
Like what?
Well, they use PowerShell, a tool IT administrators use every single day to navigate the network. They use memory scraping tools like Mimikatz to pull plain text administrator passwords directly from the server's RAM. They basically blend in perfectly with normal network traffic.
And then they use those stolen administrator credentials to systematically hunt down and destroy the network's shadow copies before they launch the ransomware.
Right. Shadow copies are the automated, localized backups built into Windows environments. By deleting those first using legitimate admin privileges, Medusa ensures that when they finally trigger the encryption lockdown, the organization has absolutely no local recovery options. It is an absolute checkmate.
And even if you do have an external backup and you refuse to pay for the decryption key, Medusa employs a dual extortion threat.
Yeah, the double dip.
They spend days exfiltrating your sensitive databases to their own servers before they encrypt your local files. If you don't pay up, they threaten to leak your proprietary data, your employee records, and your client info onto the dark web.
It's ruthless. And to defend against an automated threat of this scale, the mitigation strategies require a total architectural overhaul. CISA is pushing for zero-trust architectures and strict micro-segmentation.
Meaning what, exactly?
You have to design the network so that if an attacker compromises, say, the HR department, they hit internal firewalls that prevent them from moving horizontally into the engineering department servers.
Got it. The brief also hammers on hardware token MFA across all remote gateways to defeat the credential theft from tools like Mimikatz.
Mm.
But the ultimate failsafe they really emphasize is the implementation of immutable backups.
Crucial. Absolutely crucial.
Write once. Read many storage solutions that are physically isolated from the main network. Because even if Medusa gets full domain admin control, they structurally cannot alter or delete an immutable backup, guaranteeing you can restore your operations without paying the ransom.
The challenge, though, is that executing zero trust policies, auditing logs for those living off the land tactics, and patching edge gateways within 24 hours, it's just beyond human capacity. Human administrators simply cannot parse the sheer volume of network telemetry fast enough.
So we are forced to rely on automated AI defense systems to fight automated AI attack tools.
Pretty much. Firefighting fire.
But introducing autonomous AI into our secure environments brings us right back to the central problem of control. Anthropic just deployed a massive expansion to Claude's Google Workspace connector for enterprise subscribers.
This is a huge development.
We aren't just talking about a chatbot summarizing documents anymore. They have unlocked autonomous execution capabilities inside Gmail and Google Drive.
It is a profound shift in how we interact with software. Claude can now autonomously draft, send, reply to, and forward emails. It can analyze the context of incoming messages, retrieve relevant data from your Google Drive, reorganize your cloud documents, and execute complex workflows without you ever clicking a mouse.
It's acting on its own.
Yeah, it's bridging the gap from a generative tool to an autonomous agent.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. I would love an AI to magically organize my chaotic inbox, but I definitely don't want it autonomously emailing my boss a hallucinated resignation letter.
Naturally.
How does the AI functionally parse intent? Like, if I'm writing a highly emotional venting draft about a frustrating client that I never intend to actually send, how do I guarantee this autonomous agent doesn't misinterpret the draft as a finalized memo and just fire it off to the client's executive board?
It's a very real concern.
Right. How do we balance that incredible productivity gain against the massive risk of an AI hallucinating an action that destroys a business relationship?
Well, Anthropic is acutely aware of that exact risk profile, which is why their current architecture relies heavily on human-in-the-loop approval gates.
Okay, so it still needs me.
Yes. The autonomous agent is allowed to do the heavy lifting, gathering the data, drafting the response, tagging the files, but it cannot execute the final state change without a human physically clicking an approval prompt.
Okay, but the briefing notes that organization administrators can grant autonomous bypasses for trusted, repetitive workflows. Doesn't giving admins the power to bypass the human gate kind of defeat the entire safety protocol?
I mean, yes and no. It is a calculated compromise based on business reality. Think about it.
Yeah.
If an accounting firm uses Claude to ingest hundreds of standard PDF invoices, extract the billing totals, and drop them into a specific Drive folder, the risk of a hallucination is incredibly low.
Yeah.
And forcing a human to manually approve 500 minor file transfers completely negates the efficiency of the AI. You let it run wild on the low-risk administrative sorting. But for high-risk actions like executing a bank transfer or replying to external client emails, the strict human-in-the-loop gate remains locked.
Which brings this entire deep dive full circle. Because whether we are discussing Anthropic's AI managing an enterprise cloud environment, or Guerrilla Games redesigning a multiplayer video game, or CISA defending against a 24-hour ransomware syndicate, the ultimate deciding factor is human intent and oversight.
It really is the common denominator.
We built these incredibly complex, frictionless, automated systems to make our lives easier. And now we're realizing that without deliberate, human-imposed friction, without a human holding the reins, those systems lead directly to chaos.
The overarching lesson from summer 2026 is that friction is a necessary component of security and quality. The friction of an authored, finite narrative in a video game makes it memorable. The friction of a human-in-the-loop approval gate stops a catastrophic data leak. and the friction of a zero-trust network architecture stops a ransomware syndicate from burning down critical infrastructure.
So, the actionable takeaways for you, the listener, from today's briefing require you to apply that friction in your own digital life. Scrutinize those shipping emails. If you have a physical package inbound from the Pokemon Center or Valve, assume any text asking for a customs fee is a hyper-targeted phishing attempt.
Verify everything manually.
And if you operate an enterprise network, get those Windows IKE patches deployed, filter your UDP ports 500 and 4500, and ensure your immutable backups are truly air-gapped from your primary domain.
Security is no longer a passive state, you know. It is an active daily requirement.
It is a wild, rapidly shifting landscape out there. And looking at all these moving pieces leaves me with one final thought to ponder. We were just talking about AI. If enterprise AI like Claude is getting smart enough to autonomously read emails, organize files, and execute complex workflows, and gamers are simultaneously pushing back against games that demand endless, repetitive grinding, how long until players start pointing these autonomous AI agents at their own game libraries?
Oh, wow.
If a studio refuses to remove the live service grind, will players just use an AI to farm the battle pass while they sleep? Will autonomous agents kill the grind before the game studios do?
The architecture to execute that kind of automated gameplay is already being refined. I mean, it is a very real possibility in the near future.
Definitely something to think about the next time you log into a server. Keep questioning the systems you interact with, keep learning how they work, and stay ahead of the curve. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.